And we'll get started. Our first speaker today is Bruce S. He is from Eastern Pennsylvania. Please help me welcome Bruce.
Thank you, Nancy. I'm a recovering alcoholic. My name is Bruce.
Hi, Bruce.
Thank you. I've been waiting to hear that. Our identification is very important to me. It indicates my statement as a definition of humility. According to the literature, humility is the key factor in recovery. There's some references to it in the second tradition. Now, maybe some of you go to step meetings the way I do and face this barrage of definitions of what is humility, especially on step seven. The entire meeting can go with discussion on what is humility. Well, if you want a way to stop this filibustering and so forth, just refer to a reference in the fifth step of 12 and 12. The reference says that humility is knowing exactly what we are, who we are, and then an attempt to become what we can be. So every time I introduce myself or identify myself at an AA meeting, I say that I am a recovering alcoholic. That is what I am. My name is Bruce. That's who I am. And with the legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous, I am now able to do what I'm supposed to do. So two-thirds of the definition have already taken place. And it makes me feel good. So I say, I'm a recovering alcoholic. My name is Bruce. And you say, hi, Bruce. We all feel very comfortable. Not very comfortable, but it's getting to be that way. This is a good weekend to talk about or hear and listen and share about freedom. Now, our reference in the book is A New Freedom. That's the topic of this meeting this morning. I didn't know exactly how I was going to talk about it, and I still don't. Because if I use the phrase a new freedom, that means there was an old one. Now, what was the old freedom? The more I thought about it, the more I realized that when I was an active alcoholic, no one was forcing me to drink alcohol. I was free to choose. So that might be the old freedom. It was perverted. It was an abuse. And certainly it was a misuse of a gift. But today, I'm with a new freedom. And there are several references about that. Today is Canada Day. And Canada is celebrating its 138th birthday as a dominion. On Monday will be the 4th of July in the United States. That is a definite assertion of freedom. 229th birthday of freedom. Freedom from what? Well, freedom from tyranny. Freedom from what we shouldn't be doing. 10 years ago in San Diego, I was approached by a group of locals who saw my name badge and knew where I was from and wanted me to know that they came from a home group called the Liberty Bell Group. Liberty Bell, of course, being in Philadelphia, Philadelphia being Pennsylvania, so they assumed that I was a spokesman for Liberty Bell. But I definitely appreciated their effort because they told me they chose the name Liberty Bell because, first of all, they were free, and second, they were cracked. The free part, of course, is what we're here for today. Whether we're cracked or not, it doesn't make any difference. The Alcoholics Anonymous program simply abounds with references to freedom. If you need material, you can look, first of all, into the appendix or the index of As Bill Sees It. There are 13 entries about freedom. And most of them deal with freedom of choice because we are must do something, or the new freedom. The old freedom is choosing because we ought to do something. We're told what to do. I consider different levels of service when I think about this. Service are actions that we do, but what is the motive behind them? We start, of course, with the action and the motive. I'm doing it because I was told to do it. Now, that really isn't healthy freedom. The second level, of course, is I had this action, I performed this because I wanted it. I'm greedy. I'm selfish. I want. But it's still not a healthy reason. The best reason for service is not because you're told to do something or because you want to do something. The best reason for service is it has to be done, whatever it is. So I choose to go along with God's will. And God's will shows me the way to choose. I can't go wrong if I simply do it because it has to be done. Do it, get it out of the way, go on to something else. Old freedom. Perfect freedom. And most of all, freedom from alcohol. That is the must. As Bill puts it in several things, or several references in As Bill Sees It, the references deal with must if it is God's will, and then it has to be done. The bondage to King Alcohol is still with us, no matter how long, no matter how sober, no matter how many days we have. My complete surrender was a knowing thing. I had no problems with surrendering to alcohol. First of all, alcohol was an accessory, a little addition to what was going on in my life. Very naive I was, very simple, no problems. The accessory, however, soon came to become an accompaniment. And the accompaniment was alcohol and myself. It accompanied me. Still no problem. Then alcohol became an accomplice, my partner. The two of us could do anything, no problem. Finally, the alcohol becomes the authority. And I surrendered with complete knowing what I was doing. The tip of the iceberg, as they call it. An accessory becomes an accompaniment, becomes an accomplice, becomes the authority. And here I am, enjoying every sip. I love the odor, the color, the taste, the sting, the burn. I knew exactly the principle of the internal combustion engine. I loved it. It was a balm if I was agitated. It was an elixir if I was low. It was medicine. It was a lubricant. No wonder I surrendered. My choice, my freedom, and I completely justified it. The tip of the iceberg. And beneath the surface is still the bulk of the iceberg. And for me, even now, and especially when I was a child, this was very, very important. I had two motivations in my life. I always wanted more than my share, especially if you had it. That's called greed and jealousy. I would go to any lengths to get it. Lie, cheat, steal. My philosophy was, if you get away with it, it must be all right. And I was on my way. I had two attitudes to go along with this. The one attitude was a result of my family situation. I'm the middle of three brothers, and I understand from behavioral experts that the third or the middle person is the one that's going to have the problem. So the middle of three brothers gave me the attitude, the odds are two against one. Now, if the odds are two against one, which I assumed was what was going on, if it's two against one, you don't have to play fair. Terrific. I'm on my way. Then we have another serious problem. As a child, I had very good upbringing. I was told what to do, what not to do, what would happen. I tested it. They didn't know what they were talking about. If I lied, my tongue didn't swell up and choke me. If I stole something, my fingers didn't drop off. If I felt certain urges, so what? I didn't know what to do. So I assumed that if they didn't know what they were doing with these little lessons they were trying to teach me, I was an exception to the rule. That was the attitude. Exception to the rule, you don't have to play fair. Motivations, greed, and jealousy. Just ripe was I for active alcoholism, which in my case went for 35 years. I was 50 when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous after this life, which I chose. I did not choose to go to a rehabilitation. I was sent. I was unable to choose. I had a false freedom. Besides Bill, as Bill sees it, there are several references in the big book about freedom. To be specific, there are exactly 20 uses of that word. Now, I did not sit down with the big book and go through it like that, but I had a concordance to help me. There were 20 references to freedom. Only two deal with a new freedom. And that's what we're here for. In the foreword to the second edition, there's a reference to a path to the road. A new freedom is the path to the road of happy destiny. This, of course, is also on the end of the textbook part of the big book. The knowing of it and the newness of it are the significant parts of these two entries. The promises say we are going to know a new freedom. This is a very, very common thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. However, most of us abuse it. A lot of people claim to be doing something because they have the freedom. But there's a missing element. And that missing element is what's necessary if our freedom is going to be complete. I think of a historic example of Bonivard, a Swiss patriot, who spent many, many years in prison because of political beliefs. While in prison, he got along fine when he accepted what was there. The rats were his friends. Nobody bothered him. He was there, and he put up with it. When it came time for him to be released, he went out into the free world, and within a week was back to the dungeon, saying to the prisoners or to the guards, "Take me back." He didn't want to have a life of freedom without the missing element. The missing element is very, very important. And what is it? Well, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous gives us a three-legacy opportunity to learn what this missing element is and to apply it to freedom. We have 12 steps that show us the way to recovery. We have 12 traditions which show us with principles the way of relationship with each other and within our groups. And we have 12 concepts. If we follow them, we respond to what's happening. And that's the important part. Responsibility, it's called. The ability to respond. No one who abuses alcohol has the ability to respond. We anesthetize ourselves, we numb ourselves, we drug ourselves, we cannot respond. Without responsibility, there is no chance for true ability. I have the ability to respond. A new freedom is possible. 40 years ago, AA was 30 years old. 10,000 recovering alcoholics met here in Toronto. They heard a statement that's now part of AA liturgy. The statement, of course, is known to all of us now as the pledge, the responsibility pledge. For me, the responsibility part allows me to do a new freedom or to choose a new freedom for my complete recovery with the AA program. I'm sure you know the pledge. I am responsible. Will you join me? I am responsible when anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help. The hand of AA always to be there, and for that I am responsible. 40 years ago they said it. We say it. I hope we all practice it. If so, you won't have any problems with the new freedom. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce. Our second speaker is from the state of Michigan, Jack.
Thanks very much. My name is Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. And this is totally unfair. Bruce is quoting me. I got it written right down here. The preface to the second edition of the big book. That's the trouble when you're second and not first, see? My name's Jack. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Sanford Thursday Night Closed Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're a tradition and step meeting. If you come there for the first time, you'll hear the first tradition before you hear the first step. I got a couple spies out there from my home group. They're supposed to report back and let them know that I was where I was supposed to be when I was supposed to be there. I also have my dear friend Dwayne and Joanne and a couple good new friends, Doug and Joni. And I'm very grateful for the privilege of being here. You know, in coming to this conference, I'm a conference junkie. I've been to more than one. And years ago in the 70s, I went to Founders Day, and there was a guy around. He's since gone to the Great Meeting in the Sky, but some of you have maybe heard his tape or heard him, and it's called Wino Joe from Tyler, Texas. And Wino Joe was a speaker on Sunday morning, and he said this statement that has always stayed with me. When you come to things like this, there's something in the air. There's a mystique about this. There's an attraction about this. And part of that is what we're talking about with freedom, and I am responsible. 25 years ago, about this time, I stood on the stage as a result of Dwayne, who was my service sponsor. And the theme of that conference was the joy of living. I've always been one of my favorites. That was my first conference. 20 years ago was the 50th anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous in Montreal, and I had the privilege of being on the stage as an East Central Regional Trustee. Now, I'm here to tell you something. You've heard the statement, fake it until you make it. We were up on the stage, and we didn't hear a thing they said. When everybody laughed, we laughed. When everybody clapped, we clapped. And there's a beauty to that, because I am responsible and I was where I should be. Here, several years ago, what was it? 5, 7 years ago, there was the 50th anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous in AA here. And I had the privilege of attending that with my dear friend Tommy Hills. How many here from Ontario? You know Tommy Hills. I always loved it. You know, he used to start out his talk, he'd say, as Henry VIII said to one of his many wives when he snuck into the bedroom, "I will take but a moment of your time." Tommy, I know you're here. I think the progress for sobriety is like the progress on the other side of the fence when I became an alcoholic. It's an insidious disease, and it's a process that, like the old saying, the chains of alcohol are too weak to be felt until they're too strong to break. And when we come into this program, and I agree with what Bruce was saying when you said the new freedom, I was thinking the same thing. That assumes there's an old freedom. But I'm here to tell you, I've always been a thin-skinned, uptight, Anglo-Saxon, white American, and I never was free until I came into this program. I can't remember a conscious moment of freedom that I had in my adult life until I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous and bellied up to the table and started being a part of the solution instead of part of the problem. And I think that process, which it talks about in the big book and in the promises, is the kind of process that allows us to have this sense of feeling that we have when we get together for these conventions and when we get together at our home group. I go to a beginner's meeting. And one of the reasons that I go to a beginner's meeting is to remember from whence I came. My first meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous was on the 12th of January of 1973. I'd like to report that was the date of my last drink. But I was a slow learner. The date of my last drink is the 17th of April of 1974. And when I went to that first meeting in Flat Rock, there was a guy there by the name of Chicken Charlie. And Chicken Charlie used to say he had so many days of sobriety one day at a time. Well, I sat down and calculated it, and as of this moment in time, I have 11,396 days of continuous uninterrupted sobriety one day at a time. That's very kind of you. Very kind of you. I don't expect anybody to be impressed by that, but I am. Because I was an everyday drinker and a 24-hour-a-day drinker. The thing I have to be concerned about today is what I refer to as recovering alcoholic arrogance. That simply because I've been coming to these rooms and been dry for this number of years, that I can get, the enemy is up here, the 4.5 inches between my ears. And what I have to be concerned about is that somehow I get the idea that I can survive without this program, that I don't have to go to that meeting. And that's why I go to the beginners meeting. And that's why I go to 3 meetings a week, as a continual reminder of from whence I came. There is a beauty in what we do in our sharing experience. There is a fruition that comes as a result of that. We feed off each other. We have these anonymous occasions when, or these coincidences when God puts us in a situation and it's simply God working our life. He just doesn't sign His name to it. I'm not going to talk a long time today because Bruce has it all written down there, and I love it. But I'd like to close, and I'd like to close with a little statement that I read on a regular basis. And it was from a prayer card that Ken Himes, delegate that preceded me, had. And it's one of these things that I need to read on a regular basis. I shall pass through this way but once. If therefore there be any kindness that I can should do, or any good that I can do to my fellow man, let me not defer or neglect it, for I shall not pass this way again. And let us all extend the hand of responsibility. Let us all extend the hand of sobriety and trudge this journey of happy destiny. God bless all of you and have a safe journey home when the conference is over.
Jack warned me in the beginning that I was to tug on him if he went too long, and each speaker's given 20 minutes, so you took 10. Wendy, you have 30 now. From California, please welcome Wendy.
Whoa. How's that? Can you hear me? My name is Wendy, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm really grateful to be up here speaking today because even though I'm a little bit nervous right now, I'm just, you know, all this stuff is happening in my life. And as long as I'm up here speaking in front of a bunch of people, I actually get a reprieve from my insanity and thinking about myself. Or just, even though I'm talking about myself, I'm you know, really what I'm doing is sharing my experience with you. And in my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous is that I get to be a channel when I speak. And that, in fact, if, you know, if I'm a channel for something greater than myself, then as God or, you know, whatever that is that moves through me, that's unscripted by me and comes out to you all for whatever it's worth, that whatever comes through me leaves a residue. You know, if love is moving through me, then love leaves a residue. and I get to be outside of myself for a little while. And that's been like such a freedom in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was, you know, I'm an alcoholic, okay, first of all. I suffer from, you know, self-centered fear. And you know, they talk about alcoholism as an obsession of the mind, you know, and an allergy of the body. Well, I may not have had any alcohol in my body since April 1st, 1989, but I have certainly lived with the obsession of my mind and alcoholism, you know, because that's, you know, what I'm left with. And I love the topic of new freedom, and I am responsible, because for me, and this is, you know, what's going on in my life right now, it's like responsibility leads to freedom for me. I used to think it was the other way around. I mean, when I drank, you know, that was the solution to my obsessive mind. I mean, drinking equaled freedom for me, in my mind. You know, obviously it stopped working at some point, and I realized, you know, that I ended up at, you know, under lock and key. But now it's like responsibility means freedom, and freedom means choice. And so that I have a choice today. And you know, sometimes having a choice is overwhelming. But what I get to do today is show up in my life in a different way, and really take direction, because so much of my recovery has not been about having the answers or knowing what God's will is. I don't know. I didn't get the memo. You know, it's like I'm Helen Kellering along through my life. But what it's caused me to do is, you know, really rely on the principles of the program and actually apply them in my life to see what the solutions are for me on a daily basis. You know, because, you know, I worked the steps when I first got sober, but earlier on, I mean, I worked them like a homework assignment. I did them because I'm a good girl, you know, and I wanted to be, you know, like the best little sponsee or something. I was a people pleaser. And, you know, I completed the steps, and I put that away sort of like a homework assignment, you know, and then carried, you know, and got better real fast. And in a way for me, early sobriety was, I was, at first, you know, I had a tremendous amount of freedom. Like, when I was 3 months sober, I went to Kauai, and I just remember, I used to go to Kauai every year. And I was one of those people that when I went to Kauai with my friends, I was one of those people that at 7 a.m. the blender started, you know, and I was in the kitchen making blender drinks, you know, the rum and Mai Tais and all this different stuff. And by 11 o'clock in the morning, I was passed out, and then I was back up again whenever at 1 o'clock. And it was just all about drinking. I mean, that's the bottom line about my story is all my activities revolved around drinking. And whatever I had to do in order to make that happen, I did. Did you know, by the way, that it's against the law to consume alcohol that's not served by the stewardesses on airlines? I didn't know that. They mentioned that when I was flying here. And, you know, I thought, wow, I didn't know I was actually breaking the law when I was in the bathroom chugging vodka, you know, in the airlines. But just a little aside. But I'm sorry, I'm all over the place. So whatever I say doesn't make sense, you know, y'all know to just keep coming back. Because, I would go to Kauai every year and I would drink, and, you know, there was just a lot of, the first year that I was in Kauai, I was 3 months sober. And I just remember I had this moment of clarity when I was driving down the North Shore, and I just was thrilled beyond belief that I knew that I wasn't going to get pulled over for drunk driving, that I could drive all around the island. I could, you know, somebody could call me at midnight in an emergency, and I'd be able to get in my car. You know, I'd be able to drive my friends around. And that was amazing to me, because, you know, I didn't even know how much in bondage I was until I start, you know, experiencing freedom. Just like I generally don't know how much fear I'm in until I start getting a release from that fear, you know. And you know, this whole disease for me is a disease of perception. Nothing ever changes except my perception of myself, my perception of what God is to me, you know, my perception of you guys. And for me, working the steps and being part of the fellowship and having sponsees and being of service, and, you know, just blindly, you know, trying to apply these principles in all my affairs, as best I can, because for me, it's not neat and tidy. You know, freedom for me is messy, and I'm 16 years sober, and I'm increasingly more emotional, you know, and I know less and less about what's happening, and I become more and more available for the not knowing. I mean, one of my character defects, as identified in my fourth step, is my unwillingness to be uncomfortable with the unknown. You know, I'm always trying to control and manipulate situations in order to get what I think I need and in order to be okay. So the part of recovery for me is just that freedom, just my willingness to be uncomfortable and not have the solution, not have to know everything. I was one of those people that, you know, if you ask me a question, like if somebody asked me a question on the streets of Toronto, this is my first time here, somebody asked me a question about where something is, my first inclination is to tell them, you know? I don't know, but my inclination is, yeah, I have to figure it out or find a way to help them. You know, people-pleasing / self-centered self-righteousness must know it all. You know, that's still kind of what it is. So, you know, for me, just even using phrases like, I don't know, you know, I'm not, you know, these are phrases I often have my sponsees use, and I use them myself, just to insert these phrases into my daily world and practice saying them. I don't know. You may be right. That's a really good one. Because it gives me, if I start feeling right and if I start defending my position, you know, and rationalizing, and I love that definition of rationalize as rational lies, you know. Because usually if I've made a decision based in fear, then I will rationalize it and then I'll start defending it. And at that point, if I notice, you know, when the self-righteousness is rising in me, it's really hard to turn around. So that's where I try to insert God here. And for me, sometimes that means redirecting my thinking and putting in a placeholder, like, you may be right. I don't know. I'm going to have to get back to you. You know, can I call you back later? Because otherwise I get myself into situations where I have to make amends. Generally, that's what it boils down to. So I'm sure I had a point. Yeah, am I? What time is it? Okay, just let me know when I'm... Okay. So initially it was, you know, for me. And, you know, I heard this, and maybe it's AA folklore, maybe somebody will correct me afterwards, that originally their book was going to be called Freedom from Fear. And that ultimately, you know, this is a disease of self-centered fear. And that my experience hasn't been that I've been... And I love that. I love that, because that's what this is about. It's just about not being run by my self-centered fear. And, you know, I didn't know I was being run by my self-centered fear when I drank. I was just trying to experience some relief from the insanity of my mind. I found earlier on that alcohol did that for me. And, you know, because I am an alcoholic and I tend to overdo things, you know, if this feels good, I'm going to do it as much as I can, you know, so that I don't actually have to experience my life, take responsibility for my life, or feel my feelings. I really never really aspired to do any of those things. I aspired to look like I could do those things. You know, I aspired to look like I was responsible, and I sort of had an innate high credibility rating because of the way I looked and the way I presented myself, and I never looked like I should be doing the kinds of things that I was doing, you know. But so much of my life, I used to think I was going to write a book called Propped Up, you know, because really what I had done is just sort of propped myself up, painted like this whole scene for you, and what was really going on was I was having a bar fight with myself in the back rooms of my mind all the time, you know. And so... I didn't aspire to any of this. I just, you know, was just stumbling around and drank till I couldn't drink anymore, and something happened to me when I was 31, and I couldn't stop drinking, and I couldn't get drunk, stop working, and it was such a big, fat drag. You know, it really was, because it was my solution. It was, you know, I couldn't imagine my life without alcohol. I couldn't imagine having to be in my life and feel the feelings that I feel. You know, this isn't freedom from feelings. This, you know... program is about freedom from fear. And I have to say that I didn't, I haven't experienced a complete absence of fear since I've been sober by any means. It's just more like how I perceive that fear. What do I do with it today? That's kind of what it's like. Right now I'm in, I'm in fear because I have all this opportunity in my life, you know, and I have all these choices. And I get to actually choose what kind of life I want to live today. And it's scary for me because I was one of those people that I never took responsibility for myself. I would let situations dictate what work I did. I would let men make decisions about who I wanted to be. And, you know, that way I could resent them for making the wrong decisions. And I didn't actually have to take responsibility for myself. And today, you know, I don't get to do that. And the nature of my mind at times is no matter what I do, you know, my mind is going to start attacking me. Like, do you really think you can do that? What makes you think? Right now I'm thinking about moving from where I live in Sausalito to Los Angeles. And I have different reasons for wanting to do that. But it's mostly an intuitive, you know, a strong intuitive thought, you know, for my future, right, for different ways. And so for me, I've never lived anywhere else in the Bay Area, you know. I've only lived in the Bay Area my whole adult life. Most of my moves were geographics, but all within the Bay Area, you know. So, you know, it's like now I get to decide if I want to make this move. And last night, I didn't sleep very well because I have an opportunity to move into this house that I found that I really love in Los Angeles. And you know, I sort of flip back and forth from being scared to death to excited. You know, and there's that perception shift. And so last night, you know, we had a fire alarm in our hotel, so we were all out on the street at like 2 a.m. And I already wasn't sleeping very well. And every time I'd wake up, it's like that. And I haven't experienced this for a long time. It's like that 4 a.m. You know, there's a writer in my area that calls that radio station K-fucked. So. And so that channel was turned up pretty high in my head last night. And I realized that whenever that I'm tuned into that station, it doesn't really matter what decision I make because it's going to attack me and undermine me. It's like, do I do this? Well, if you do this, then you're not following your heart and, you know, you're going to be unhappy there or you're never going to find out. You know, if I do this, then what makes you think you can do that? You're going to lose your clients, you know, blah, blah, blah. It attacks me every which way. And often what I used to do when this would happen is I'd get up in the middle of the night and write an inventory, and then I would meditate. And I have to say that whenever I did that, it never failed to work. And I was able to go back to sleep. Because that stuff, especially that 4 in the morning stuff, once I realize that's happening, there's a bigger part of me now that says, it's going to be okay. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. You're just freaking yourself out. But if they're German here. My parents are German. They'd always read me these horrible German, you know, fairy tales right before I go to sleep with all these guys with long nails and, you know. So do I want to tell myself that kind of story or do I want to tell myself a different story? And that a different story was born in Alcoholics Anonymous for me. It's about having faith, you know, and a power greater than myself. It's about telling the truth because I was such a, you know, accomplished liar. You know, I lied to myself in my diaries when I was little, you know. It's like, where do you go from there? Into politics, maybe, I don't know. But I'm not a politician, you know, but I am, you know, in my own life. And so it's like, do I want to be a Democrat or a Republican? And, you know, anyway, this is what my mind does to me all day long when I'm left to my own devices. So it's just a relief for me to be able to show up and tell the truth as best I can and try to let go of the results because otherwise, you know, I'm tuned into a station that will destroy me and ultimately lead me back to a drink because that is the only relief I ever got, you know, from what was going on inside of my head. And this is a spiritual solution. I mean, 6 and 7 were amazing steps for me because when I mean, in the beginning, I just thought of them as filler steps, you know, kind of something to keep you busy between, you know, 5 and 8. You know, just something to give the person to do after the fifth step. You know, get the book, take it down off of the shelf, review the blah, blah, blah. Just give them some decompression time. But for me, they have been the ones that have kicked my ass, because the more familiar I get with my own character defects and my own fear and my unwillingness to take responsibility, my unwillingness to tell the truth, it's been about an exploration of the depths of my unwillingness for many years. And I had this, I don't know, I'm sort of esoteric, but I had this one experience where I was trying to visualize my character defects as, in my mind, this is what it looked like. Not in the book, you know, okay, but this is what it looked like in my mind, that my character defects or my fear, I was in particular fear about work at that time, was a cat, you know, and I was the mouse inside of this cat's mouth. And I was trying to visualize the cat opening its mouth and gently dropping the mouse down. And I visualized that, and I realized the mouse was terrified of being let go from the jaws of that cat. I am terrified of letting go of my character defects. And because that's how I've managed and controlled my life and my thinking. And just my willingness to enter into this softer place where I don't have all the answers. You know, and I can become willing to just really ask God to remove these things and to lead me and allow me not to have self-will driving the train. Because I don't know about you all, but it's really hard for me to differentiate between when I'm doing my will and God's will. And I just really continue to pray and try to be available for the transformation. Because if I have it figured out in my head, then I've already missed the boat in a weird way. You know, my concept of God is so much more about the love that lives inside of me and that I kept under lock and key. You know, I have access to a power that lives inside of me. And the more I'm willing to just, you know, let go of what my perceptions about what that means and experience that love. I mean, it was locked up and sort of metered out to those that seemed not, either because I wanted something, you know, or to people that seemed you know, somehow worthy of it, and that was never me. You know, I was never worthy of that love, and so it's just about me. For me, God doesn't live outside of me. Although I generally often stare straight up into the sky looking for Him, you know, it's inside of me, and just my willingness to let that love move through me and be available. I seem to think that there's some sort of lack of abundance. Like there's not enough love to go around. There's not enough generosity to go around, and just connecting myself with boundless possibilities, you know. And there's so much freedom there. And, you know, one of these gentlemen was talking about, you know, somebody being released from jail and not wanting to go. And it's just my willingness to see and be free of what binds me. They say, you know, this little story about, have you put a flea in a jar? I think it's a flea. We'll use a flea. And, you know, and have the top on the jar, and the flea is going to jump up and down and jump up and down and hit the top of the jar. And, you know, even after you take the top of the jar off, that flea still just jumps up and down as far as the top was. And so much about sobriety is for me realizing that I can jump out of the jar, you know, that I have the ability and the tools to do this. And it isn't about marrying the right guy or having the right job or what it looks like on the outside, because I've had all of that, and none of it was the solution for me. And it's just about my willingness to continue to engage in this process, you know, of surrender and humility and acceptance and willingness. And that equals freedom today. That equals freedom today. Sometimes when I'm really feeling frightened and... How am I doing? Sometimes when I really feel frightened and I'm not sure what to do, the shortcut of the whole program is how to be of service. How can I be of service right now? And because I'm so when I notice that I'm in fear, you know, and that particular station is going on high, so one of my solutions, because I work at home and I'm alone a lot, is I call it running for mayor of Sausalito, which is where I live. I go outside into my world, and I just greet every person that I meet as though I'd always wanted to meet them. I mean, not like psycho fan, scary, like, you know, like, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. But more like just acknowledging the people that I see on the street, you know, acknowledging the woman that's making my coffee, you know, the guy that I'm buying, you know, my orange juice from, helping a tourist on the street find their way. And when I'm doing that, I'm not feeling like doing it. But it's like a fake it till you make it thing. And if I do that long enough, I get outside of myself. I mean, it certainly applies in the program in terms of working with sponsees and showing up at meetings and speaking when you're asked. But if it goes so far beyond that, you know, into every moment of my day, when I'm driving, you know, and I really, self-righteousness is, you know, ripe when I'm driving, and just being willing to let somebody go in front of me. So I fake it, you know, like I'm running for mayor, I'm acknowledging people, I'm letting love move through me, and like I said, the very act of doing that changes the way I feel. So I think I'm done. I'm just really grateful to be part of this program, and thank you.